And some enchanted evening, I still remember, and after all these years, when you see your true love. And he would sing these Rodgers and Hammerstein songs all day long. And first of all, it didn't seem so bad. For about 2 weeks, it wasn't so bad. But after 2 weeks, it started driving me crazy. So I says to him, "Now, you're a great singer." He did have a really good, it was a really good voice. Really, if he had a bad voice, it might have even been worse. I don't know. But he did have, I said, "You got a great voice. But singing is driving me crazy. Could you please stop?" It took me 2 weeks to build up gumption to say that to him. You know what he said? He said, "This is just me. Sorry." And then he kept singing. So we'd be walking door to door, you know, in between the doors, and we'd knock on the doors and preach our message to the people. And but in between all the doors, I have to listen to him singing "Some Enchanted Evening." And the rest of Rodgers and Hammerstein songs and the Sound of Music songs. You really love them, Sound of Music songs. And I was so glad to be rid of him. There was his only two faults. He was the best guy, of all the guys I was with. But he wouldn't let me go see the Beatles, and he sang all the time. But outside that, he was just a really nice guy. But boy, was I glad to be rid of him. But the point is, no matter how nice the person is, if we don't see the Christ within them, they will get on our nerves, and we're going to see something else besides Christ in them. We're going to start seeing the devil in them before long. Now, that's one thing about a group like this. A lot of us don't know each other very well. You guys don't know how irritating Curtis can be, so really, he looks like just a really nice guy that you'd like maybe spend a month with. Actually, if you want a party, Curtis is the guy to party with. He's the funnest guy to party with. Yeah. I'm just joking about him.
I was speaking
of. All right.
Yeah, JJ is here. Sorry about that. Okay,
ready? Okay, good going.
Anybody else?
Somebody trying to sell him some siding.
Put it on silent.
I like this time of year, though, because this time of year gets a lot of criticism. Everyone says Christmas is too commercial, Christmas is too this, they've taken the Christ out of Christmas. But Christ is never completely out of Christmas. You find when you get together with a group during Christmas, there seems to be just a little better spirit, a little bit more brotherhood, a little bit more cheer, a little bit more remembrance of who we are. So in this way, whether you say Happy Holidays or Merry Christmas or Happy Hanukkah, there's a sparkle in the air and a little bit of more of what we might call a remembrance of what we're supposed to be. We give each other gifts, whether we want them or not. And even though we'll never use a gift, we still say thank you and are pleasant. And then you give the gift to your neighbor for a birthday. So at least it's usable, so you don't have to buy a gift for that wedding present or whatever. So anyway, but during this time of year, I often am touched in my inner soul because of different things that just happen. Whether it be the bell ringer at Albertsons, whether it be a party you go to, whether it be listening to Christmas carols on TV, or listening to Christmas carolers in person. I remember I was at Albertsons last Christmas. A bunch of Christmas carolers just came in there and started singing out of the blue. It was really beautiful. The music really touched me, and I thought, you know, Christmas is a great time of year. Because here I was shopping, and these guys come in. I don't know even if they're authorized to come in, but they just come in the store and started singing. And I thought that was pretty cool. And they stimulated the Christ energy or spirit within me, just listening to them. Now, as we progress along in our progression, we progress through many, many lifetimes. There's different theories as to how many lifetimes we go through. I believe we go through approximately 1,000 lifetimes before we achieve liberation. And why do I think this? Because the center in the top of the head has 1,000 petals on it. And the petals of all of our various centers unfold. Each one of our centers has different amounts of petals on it. The center between the eyebrows has 96. Heart center has 12, I believe, and so on. And so as each one of these petals unfold, it unfolds a new type of energy. But the center at the top of the head is in vibration with all the other centers of your body. So when something is affected in one of your other centers, it affects one of the petals or one or more of the petals on the top of your head. And I believe that there's 1,000 petals on top of the head signifying 1,000 lifetimes. Now, it's not exactly 1,000 lifetimes, but in each lifetime, we unfold a new type of energy and consciousness that we never had before. And when this happens, one of the petals at the top of your head unfolds, and you have a little bit of energy and substance added to your consciousness that you never had in all of your previous lifetimes. Now, sometimes if your life is cut short or if you really screw up, you may not get that petal completely stimulated. Or if you're really moving along and making a lot of progress, you might unfold two of them. So it's possible for somebody that's really aggressive in pursuing his consciousness to go less than 1,000 lifetimes. Others, like Curtis, it may take 2,000. He's on his 2,001st, right?
I'm just lucky to be.
I pick on my friends because they let me. So think of that, 1,000 lifetimes. Now a lot of people think, well, we just have 12 lifetimes. To give evidence that there's 1,000 lifetimes, how many people here have been married? Raise your hand. Married and divorced. Okay. Now, your husband that you're with, did he grow at all the time you were with him? Yes or no?
A little bit.
Okay. He grew a little bit. Now, when you look at where he was when you married him and where he was when you divorced him, did his consciousness... did he seem to, like, overcome anything or improve much?
There was a phase, definitely. Yeah, there was.
Okay. But overall, if you've been married and divorced and you look at that guy, you're able to look at him objectively. Now, if you're madly in love, you can't be objective, you know. But if you've been in and out of a relationship or if you've been married to somebody for, like, 30 years, you might think, well... he hasn't really moved that much. You know, when I married him, he watched football, drank beer. He still watches football, drank beer, and that's about all he does. You know? And this is kind of the way it goes. When you look at yourself, it's different. You cannot see yourself objectively. You can see the other guy fairly objectively. And in a relationship, the big complaint that many people have about their partner in a relationship is, the guy just doesn't seem to be moving. And in this way, we can see that really real progress is really pretty slow. You actually learn about one thing in each life. Now, it appears that you learn more than one thing because we learn all kinds of facts. You know, we learn what the capital of Minnesota is and who is president in 1812 or whatever. But that doesn't mean you're making progress. That's just filling your computer mind full of memory. That's not progress. Progress is where you really develop a greater skill that moves you ahead in your spiritual evolution. Yes.
in my experience with my husband, it seemed that the parts of him that were stuck were a catalyst for assisting me to move forward. It made me work harder to be more and to develop, you know,
it's like the
mirror was incredible.
Yes, that's one of the best parts about relationship. You can be in a relationship with a person that's stuck and you can think, well, I don't want to be this way. This is teaching me what not to do. Or it may produce growth in you by trying to help the other person, even though he's beyond help. It may still help you. So in each life, you're given just one thing to learn. The Buddhists teach this also. They say before a teacher can go out and teach Buddhism, he has to get rid of that one thing, and get out of the way and get it learned and get it behind him, and then he can go out and be a teacher. That's one of the philosophies that they go by, which I believe to be true. But in each life, there's basically one basic thing that's new that you have to learn. Now, in our lives, we relearn a lot of the old things. We actually get to our basic intelligence at the age of 21, the basic intelligence where we left off in our past lives. All the accumulated wisdom and intelligence manifests in the average person when he's about the age of 21.